Hi, I'm Roy Colin, and I'm the creator of the podcast. You can find everything about me and the five podcasts on bio.link/podcaster, and you'll find it in the QR code there. I'd also like to thank my sponsors. If you or someone you know is struggling with anxiety and want to know how to be 100% anxiety free in 6 weeks without therapy or drugs, Daniel Packard Anxiety Solution Program Company offers a 6 weeks system that permanently solves anxiety at an astounding 90% success rate. People who join the program only pay at the end once they have clear, measurable results. If you're interested in learning more, go to permanentanxietysolutions.com, where you can book a free consultation with Daniel. You have high blood pressure and want to get off the meds? Doctors are amazed at what Zona Plus can do. Get a $50 discount with my code ROY. Go to zona.com/discount/Roy, and you see the QR code for all my sponsors down at the end. Quality Polish manufacturer of metal products for telecommunication and workshop equipment and other metals. If you'd like a brochure, you see it in the QR code, and you just let us know if you would like a quotation shipped internationally and very competitive rates. I hope you enjoy this week's podcast.
Welcome to the Speaking Podcast. You can find all our episodes on speakingpodcast.com. Also on BitChute and YouTube, you'll find the links in the podcast description. I'm also a podcasting coach because I got four other podcasts. And you'll find everything on bio.link/podcaster. My guest today, voice expert, author, not in one book, three, maybe more, but I found three, a podcaster and a speaker. Please welcome John Henney.
Thank you for having me.
No problem at all. So, I mean, I've touched on the bullet points, but you might let listeners know a bit more about who's John.
Yeah, so I've been a voice teacher for over 30 years at this point. And I also train voice teachers around the world. And I've worked with singers, some pretty big names, as well as amateur singers. And I also work with professional voice users, voiceover artists, speakers, attorneys, business leaders, public speakers. And what I found is what makes a singing performance really compelling and the devices that singers use to hold interest also work for speakers. And so I just love to introduce speakers to the voice, how to use your voice in the right way, how to bring in musical devices to hold interest. And yeah, that's my passion.
And like, because there's a load of things that I want to touch on today, because I find this fascinating. I know you're a very successful podcaster as well with a massive YouTube following, but like with the different, like the coaching, you know, you've got corporate employees, military, sports announcers, like what's the difference and what's the passion for you? Because I mean, for you, is it a case of you have to have a different mindset when you're dealing with the military, or is it just you have a system and the system is kind of depending on the client?
Yeah, my system is really dependent on the client. I mean, it's kind of universal what's going to work and hold people's interest, but everyone's voice is different and everyone's relationship to their voice is different. When people learn to sing, it's very interesting because they try and relate it to other instruments. And the voice is nothing like other instruments. Just the way that we interact with this instrument is almost mysterious, right? We don't have this real conscious control. We don't really feel these muscles working. And so the voice, because we're using it all the time, it can tend to fall below our awareness. And that's where problems can start. So with singers, when I'm working with them, they're usually more vocally aware. When I go with speakers, they often haven't really spent much time thinking about their voice and thinking about their instrument. So for me, part of the job there is just really increasing awareness, because you're taking two little bits of soft tissue about the size of your thumbnail, and it really is the driver of your business, your job, your relationships. And so I get people thinking about vocal health and how they're using their voice, how to take care of it, and also how to use it so that it really engages the listener.
And you know, like, there's a lot of people, they'd love to be singer, but they don't know what style. Is there people that are just tone deaf and they shouldn't? Or is it just the case they haven't found their voice for the right type of style? Like, is there, are you able to kind of navigate somebody to kind of go, okay, it should be more the Doors kind of talking, singing, as opposed to the operas? I mean, there's so many genres for that.
Yeah, I mean, there are genres, if you're talking about opera, and certainly specific operas where they need a very particular voice type. You know, the aesthetics in classical music are a little more cast in stone, if you will. But in popular music, it's really so open to different types of voices. And yeah, there are people, and there are genetic components they're finding as well, where pitch recognition and being able to reproduce pitch may be a little harder. But it's a very, very tiny percentage of the population that really ultimately can't match pitch. It's really just connecting the mind with this instrument. And the way I put it is, look, there are certain body types that you need to have in order to be a champion bodybuilder. However, we can all get in better shape. We can all improve our voice. And unless there is some real physical or neurological damage that's precluding you from using your voice properly, everyone can improve their voice.
Excellent. And I suppose especially for speakers, like, what kind of warm-up would you kind of recommend for them?
Yes, a really, really simple warm-up is humming. One thing that's very, very popular right now in the voice community is vocalizing through a straw. You can grab a drink straw. They actually make, I've got these metal straws that they make for singers. And they're cut to a specific size and diameter, but you can just grab a drink straw. You can grab a couple of cocktail or coffee stirrer straws. And what you do is you just play it like a kazoo. And if you need a little more resistance, you can just put your fingertip on the end of it. And you should feel a bit of like a bullfrog throat. But what that does is it actually, because the airflow now is constricted through this straw, it sends it back down to the vocal cords, and it's almost like a little massage. And so that's a great warm-up for singers and speakers. To get the voice going. And also, you need to be properly hydrated when you're going to be using your voice. So things, drink enough water. And also, people will use nebulizers and put a little bit of saline solution in there. I've actually got one here I always keep by me. And this will kick out the saline solution as a mist, and this goes directly on the vocal folds, which can be really helpful. So yeah, I've got all my little contraptions with me.
And what about, say, if somebody's doing kind of like a full day event or a long workshop, is there a kind of a warm down thing that you should do as well, if you've kind of been using your voice all day, to kind of make sure that you don't damage it?
That's a fantastic question. Yes. And it's basically, you just do the same thing as a warm up. And the reason that you want to warm down or cool down is, if you've been doing a lot of speaking and then you just go and fall asleep, everything can be a little tight. So just allowing yourself those, just do glides. You can even just pretend you're blowing through a straw. And just move the voice up and down, just to stretch those tendons and tiny muscles and give those tissues a little bit of tender, loving care.
Excellent. And for those that are kind of speakers that haven't thought about getting kind of coaching, what amount of work is kind of needed? Is it a case if you get kind of 10 sessions, or does it vary? What to just kind of make them get to kind of the next level?
It will vary by each person, but it's nowhere near the amount of training that a singer would go through. It can actually be a pretty quick process for speakers. Initially, it really is just getting this awareness of your voice, just being getting in touch with the sensations, because that's really how we drive this instrument. And one of the most important things that people will first discover about their voice is their general speaking pitch. Because if you're not speaking at your optimal pitch, your voice is going to have issues speaking for a long time. You're probably going to start stressing it. And then also understanding resonance. What is fascinating about the voice is so much of what we hear is actually the result of what occurs in the vocal tract, which is your throat and your mouth. The vocal cords are basically just chopping up this stream of air. And as they close, they create this change in pressure. And changes in pressure are what create weather and what create sound. It starts when you get negative pressure, then positive pressure will move in and it starts air molecules vibrating. That's what sound is. And all of this magic is occurring in the vocal tract. And when we learn to use our vocal tract properly, you're going to bring out more of the qualities of your voice. An example that I see people making the mistake is they think speaking at a lower pitch creates authority, and it does to a point, but they'll often overdo it. So people start talking down here and there's very little resonance and people have trouble hearing them. So they start to squeeze more at the vocal cords to try and get the sound out. And the next thing they know, their voice is tired, they're clearing their throat, they're starting to go hoarse. And look, if you're doing an all-day workshop, your vocal cords are opening and closing upwards of a million times a day. I mean, they are opening and closing hundreds of times a second. So we need to be careful how we're using this instrument. Because again, it's soft tissue, and when it is aggravated, it's going to start to swell. And when it swells, you start to go hoarse.
And what about, like, say, the speaker? Because, I mean, I've come across a few of them that when you get to talk to them and they're just talking like us just normally. But when they go on stage, they feel they have to roar their head off and they're like, I'm energetic and everything. Are they actually doing themselves damage by changing that much?
You know what? It depends on how they are being energetic. I've worked with stage actors who have scenes where they have to yell, and I've worked with them to be able to yell in a safer way. And that really comes down to resonance. If you're using resonance to power your voice, you're going to have plenty of energy, plenty of power. If that's what you feel you need during moments on stage, you don't want to do that the whole time you're on stage because that gets quite annoying. But if you allow the power of resonance to do it, you'll be okay. The mistake people make is they try and do it at the level of the vocal cords and slamming them together to try and create the energy. And while that will make you louder, it's basically just shouting, and you can only do that for so long.
Excellent. And just on your own kind of speaking career, because there was a few things that I saw, and I wasn't sure like, does the IVTOM USC, the Paul McCartney Liverpool Institute, and the VIP Worldwide. So, like, are these things that you're going and speaking just like for an hour, or are they, yeah?
Yeah, some of them are for an hour, some of them are for multiple hours. I've done master classes all around the world. And yeah, I sometimes lecture for other voice teachers, or I will lecture for groups, speakers, musicians, etc. And I love public speaking. I really, really enjoy it. And it's one of those things, it really is a mind game when you're getting ready to go up there, because we always get that little voice, that little self-doubt, right? And the imposter syndrome whisperer. And so I've learned to be able to calm those voices and really enjoy it. But it took a little while. It can be intimidating when you're first doing public speaking.
With the master classes, because I saw that you're obviously in the States, you've done it in Europe, I believe Japan and Australia. Like, what have you learned over the years regarding kind of connecting with the audience? Because obviously it's going to be totally different in Japan as it is in Europe.
Yeah, it's interesting. When I've taught in places in Japan, like Japan or Poland, I'll have an interpreter going. And so it's just, it's interesting the different countries, because in Japan, as opposed to Poland, they would just sit and patiently wait as the interpreter went. And in Poland, one side started going off on the other side because one side wanted the interpreter to slow down and the other side wanted the interpreter to speed up. So it's just interesting the different cultures. But I think overall, people just are really hungry for this information. And yeah, and connecting with the audience, I think it really is just allowing yourself to not turn inward when you're speaking and just allow all of your energy and your connection to be with the audience. And you can feel when their interest starts to sag a little bit. You know, you need to pick it up a little, or if maybe you're overwhelming them and slow things down or explain a little more. So the audience is like speaking to one person. You just kind of read the mood and get in touch with the room.
Excellent. And over the years, what kind of things have gone wrong in the speaking that you could kind of advise people to be aware of, whether it's technology or just addressing the room or just even, you know, when you're moving, traveling around?
Yeah, well, with technology, once you start going beyond slides, when you want to start running videos and audio and different things, you're just giving a greater chance to things going wrong. So I try and keep things simple. Keep the slides really simple, because people, if there's too much on your slides, they're going to be reading and not paying attention to you. I think mistakes that I have made, I've sometimes misjudged the audience, and I did this early. I would think that they need to know so much, and I'd almost do a brain dump, right? And you almost teach too much. And it really is just getting in touch with who this audience is and what problem can you solve? What can you teach them that they can walk away with a good result and not overload them?
Excellent. And with a voice coach then, is it, I mean, obviously it's better in person, but is it as effective online? Because I mean, that's obviously, especially in the last few years, everybody's doing it online. Do you find it that you can get as good results with somebody that's online?
Yeah, I've been teaching remote lessons well before there was Skype or any internet option. I used to have a $1,500 speaker phone that could transmit and receive sound at the same time. And so I would just be on the phone with people teaching lessons. I just had that sitting on my piano. And I find that remote lessons, you can get about 97%, that sounds silly to give it that close of a numerical value, but it's pretty close to 100%. And myself, I had a voice teacher where I discovered that when he taught me over the phone or online, he was more engaged and listening closer than when I was in person. He was more distracted. So I just, even though he wasn't that far, I just started doing everything online. So it's online is very effective.
And is there times where it's better not to have the video so that you're totally focusing on the voice, or does that matter?
Oh, that's a great question. I always have the video on just because I like to see what they're doing. If there are perhaps any issues, maybe they're kind of moving their chest too much when they're breathing, or if there's any excess tension when I'm working with them. So, and I think the video does help connect. But if somebody, I've done plenty where it's just voice and it's effective as well.
Okay, excellent. So you're the author of 3 books: Begin Singing, Teaching Contemporary Singing, and Voice Teacher Influencer, I believe.
Yes.
So you might just kind of touch on them a bit and let people know what exactly you're covering inside them.
Yeah, so my first book, Teaching Contemporary Singing, is for voice teachers, but also very interested, serious singers. I think it's a good book for them as well. And then Voice Teacher Influencer was written for voice teachers who wanted to start growing their business, expanding, maybe getting into course creation, podcasting, how to do blogging, all of those things. And then Beginning Singing, which is my best-selling book, but also the hardest to write, because I really wanted to give high-level knowledge to someone who really doesn't know much about the voice at all. And that one, I really worked hard over every sentence. That was a hard one to write, but I'm quite proud of it. And I've started writing a book for speakers. So I'm hoping to have that out certainly within the next 6 months.
Excellent, excellent. So I know your podcasting, you started a year before me. It was October 2015, I believe, is when you started the podcast.
Oh, was it? Oh, you do your research.
So it's very successful. I mean, you've got massive numbers on YouTube. So I suppose you might just kind of talk about that a bit and how the journey is, how it grew and everything.
Yeah. So my podcast, I started it off just doing it occasionally, and the numbers weren't that great. And I think I hadn't done an episode in a couple of months, and I happened to just look and went, wait a minute, these listeners are going up, even though I'm not releasing episodes. So then I started to do it more often, and then I went to weekly. And yeah, it does well. I really focus on how the voice works, voice science, which I find absolutely fascinating, and the fact that we still don't know everything about how this instrument works, which is quite remarkable in this time. And I also go into mindsets, because our relationship with this instrument, especially for singers, it's tricky. When somebody goes to learn guitar, they don't feel shame if they can't properly play an E chord in their first lesson, but people will attach shame and embarrassment if they can't use this instrument at a level that they think it should be used at. And my thing with speakers is everybody's singing. We're always singing all the time, because they don't know which came first, speech or singing, but they really are kind of extensions of each other. And music itself evolved from speech. And even just what we associate with the intervals of sad music versus happy music come from the intervals that we will use in speech.
Excellent. And I heard, I'm not sure when you started doing that, but that you were... originally it was yourself talking, but then you started to kind of bring on guests. You were going to do two a week, and I'm just wondering, because I remember when I done that first, like I was doing one, and when I started with the speaking podcast, and then I decided I'll do two, thinking my audience would double, but it actually tripled and made a big difference to it. And just wondering what you've kind of learned. Did you find a lot more work, and you know, the strangeness of being solo, which is very hard? I mean, I find that strange for me. I find it very hard. It's not easy doing it. But then to get into the interview style.
Yeah. I just started it by myself because I would just think about the voice or points that were in lessons. And I thought, oh, this is what I dealt with this student would probably help others. And so I just started talking into the mic, and it seemed to work. And then I thought, oh, I've actually got a good network of people that I know. And so I started to bring in guests. And I think I resisted it at first just because of the logistics. It just made editing a little harder and just the technology and if things drop out, but it actually works quite well. And then I was doing two episodes a week for a while. And then the pandemic hit and just the chaos of all that. And I dropped down to an episode a week, and I've been doing that, but now I've gotten so far ahead on episodes. I'm thinking about going back to a week.
And because obviously, you know, I see the mic. So what mic is it? Are you using, and what kind of tips could you give to both podcasters and YouTubers to make the quality better? And obviously any tips you can share on growing the channel as well, because you know, to get, I think, 137 subs is very impressive.
Yeah, now those subs are for a lot of the voice stuff that I do on YouTube. I do voice lessons as well as put the podcast on there. And then
and you keep them on separate playlists, then you have different playlists.
I do,
for each one.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and the most popular thing I do is reaction videos where I will listen to or watch a great vocal performance and then just kind of break down what's happening. And so that also helps drive the numbers. In terms of the podcast, this microphone it's the Shure SM7B, I believe it's called. It's the ubiquitous one you see everybody have. But I run that just into a little bit of simple outboard gear. I'm by no means an audio engineer or a tech head. I think you have to get decent audio quality. And I did invest, I'm not in it right now, but often when I do my podcast, I have a vocal booth. And you can create those at home as well. But just as long as you have a quiet place, so you're not being disturbed by neighbors or other people in your house. And the key to a podcast, as you know, is consistency. And just allowing that audience to build. What do they say? Most podcasts don't go past the first 10 episodes, because in those first 10 episodes, you're not going to have a lot of listeners. And it takes a while for the audience to find you. But I find, of all the things that I do, the podcast, if someone listens to my podcast, that's where people really become a fan, if you will, of what I do. That's a connection with the listener that is without distraction. YouTube, Instagram, all of these other platforms, there's constant distraction with the person watching you, and the platforms are always throwing other things at them to lead them to watch something else. They just want to hold their interest. And I also love podcasts because it's a property that I own. And I've certainly had my problems. I had my Facebook business account, even though I had two-factor authentication on, hacked, and I was demoted to an employee. And it turns out it looks like Facebook had some internal issues where employees were selling backdoor keys to hackers. But, you know, people can lose their channels. So that's why I really do like the idea of a podcast.
And it's Libsyn. Have you always been with Libsyn, or did you change during the years that you've been podcasting?
No, I've actually always been with Libsyn. I did an early version of a podcast way, way back when GarageBand first introduced podcasting. And I don't even remember what I uploaded that to, but I did, I don't know, 10 episodes. And I actually got a lot of downloads. It was surprising. I should have kept it up at the time, but it wasn't until years later I got serious about podcasting. Yeah, Libsyn, I've always been with Libsyn. I've had no problems with it, but of course there are many platforms that work well.
And with the social media, because it's kind of a minefield. I mean, you've obviously mastered do you engage? Because when you get to certain numbers, it becomes kind of impossible to be commenting and everything. But was it something you were doing at the start to kind of connect with your listeners, or what was your strategy?
Yeah, I will engage on my educational content. But when I'm doing, if I have a video, particularly the reaction videos, sometimes those comments just get out of control. So I don't tend to engage. My favorite thing to engage with is the trolls. And I like to have just a bit of fun at my expense. So things that we'll say, one of my favorite was somebody said, are you deaf and blind? And I replied, yes, and I sure play a mean pinball. So it's just things like that, because The thing that you will have to get past on social media, especially when you start getting numbers, is you are going to get trolled. And some of it can be quite savage. And you just have to have a laugh with it.
Absolutely. And I think I've seen people, they've thrown in the towel because they start engaging. I have a laugh sometimes, just like yourself, you know, sometimes I know. But what I've noticed is that anybody, whether it's on Facebook or whatever platform, like most of the time, they have no picture or anything. So you're not dealing with somebody that's empty anyway. That, you know, and if you start engaging, all you're doing is losing your own energy. And if it never goes up, it's always, you know, that they're trying to bring you down. So don't stoop to their level. And, you know, there's a load, I'll just delete it, you know, because I don't want other people to see it either. Because sometimes, especially with the Polish, there are some horrible things that people say. And I just say, okay, block it or report it and just move on. Like,
yeah. I mean, I never argue with them. I never defend myself to them. And what I usually do is I'll make those jokes just so I can put it on my other social media, because people will enjoy me just having, you know, a little clap back, a little comeback to them. But my rule, and I'm pretty darn good about following it, is I do not argue on social media, because once you start that, now you're emotionally engaged. Now you're waiting to see what the person's going to say back. You're checking, you start to become enraged, and we don't have the time or energy for that. So yeah, I absolutely do not do that.
Brilliant. So just with the speaking, like for those that are terrified, I mean, obviously you're helping them with the voice, but like because of your experience and everything, what kind of tips could you give the person that's trying to do it for the first time to just overcome that fear of public speaking?
Yeah, well, there's a couple of things. The first thing I'll say, as they say, the only way around is through. And the way that you are going to become comfortable with public speaking is by speaking, getting up in front of people. So you have to have that experience, number one. Number two, when you are feeling that fear, that is because you are turning inward. That is the ego that is worried about what other people think of you. And that stems from many years ago when we traveled in small groups. If we were cast out from that group, that could very well mean death. So the rejection of others is a very deep-rooted primal fear. And the way I combat that when that voice starts to go is I put my attention completely on the people I'm going to be speaking for. And when it starts, I say, no, this is not about me. This is about them. And they have shown up to hear me, and I owe it to them to give them my best. And so I completely put the focus on them. And then the other thing I do is, and I say this to myself before I go out, I give you permission to not like me, because they have that right anyway. But if you just mentally say, look, I'm going to go out and do what I do. If you don't like it, that's okay. There are speakers, there are works of art that I don't like, but I'm here for the person that I can help. And that person who needs to hear what I have to say is likely in this room, and I want to be present and available for them and not worried about the person who's not going to like it.
Excellent. And just finally, because obviously with your experience with the books and like teaching kind of other coaches, for those, because you'd be at a high level, obviously, you know, for somebody that's actually looking to, you know, get your services, but for somebody that's starting off and they're going locally, how can they know that they're getting somebody that's actually beneficial to them and not doing them kind of, they're not getting somebody that's trying to wing it, let's say?
Yeah, I'm finding more and more that voice coaches these days are better than when I first started. And voice teachers, vocal coaches, they're bringing in different disciplines, neuroscience, the science of movement coaching. there are so many wonderful things happening in the industry. So your chances of getting somebody good are better. And you can also just look and see who they've worked with, just see the results. And when you're working with a coach, connecting with them and feeling like you're being heard and understood is really important. Everything should be really clear to you. You shouldn't walk away confused. And your voice should feel better when you leave the lesson than when you started. So those are pretty good indicators.
Excellent. Listen, John, thoroughly enjoyed our conversation. You might let people know how they can get in contact with you.
Yeah, my main website is johnhenny.com. And my website for speakers is compellingspeaker.com. And I've got some free warm-ups that you can get there. It's a little checklist. So if you have a presentation and you've got that morning voice going, you can just run through that and get your voice working.
Excellent. Yeah, perfect. I'll make sure I put the links both on the audio and the video, along with your YouTube channel and your podcast. So thanks very much, John.
Thank you.
So that's all for the Speaking Podcast. You'll find all our episodes on speakingpodcast.com. As mentioned, we're on BitChute and YouTube. And you'll find my coaching, along with my four other podcasts, The Meditation, Learn Polish, The Crypto, and The Awakening, Exposing Fraud and Corruption, but with solutions, on bio.link/podcaster. Be sure to give us a thumbs up, 5-star rating, share with your friends. And make sure you check out John's podcast. Give him a 5-star rating as well. It really helps. And if you get his book and you like it, give him a 5-star review, because it gets more people to see it. Until next week, take care.
So I hope you enjoyed this week's podcast. You'll find everything about me on bio.link/podcaster with all my podcasts, and you'll find it you see in the QR code in the graphic that's shown. I'd like again to thank my sponsors. So if you or someone you know struggling with anxiety and want to know how to be 100% anxiety-free 6 weeks without therapy or drugs, Daniel Packard's Anxiety Solution Program company offers a 6-week system that permanently solves anxiety at an astounding 90% success rate. People who join the program only pay at the end once they have clear, measurable results. If you're interested in learning more, go to permanentanxietysolutions.com, where you can book a free consultation with Daniel. Do you fight blood pressure and or want to get off the meds? Doctors are amazed at what Zona Plus can do. You can get a $50 discount with my code Roy, zona.com/discount/Roy. And you'll see it in the QR code as well as Daniel's QR code. Quality manufacturer of metal products for telecommunication and workshop equipment and other metal materials. You see the brochure there in the QR code, and let me know if you would like a quotation shipped internationally at very competitive price. I'd like to thank all my sponsors and also all my listeners. Be sure to give me a thumbs up, 5-star rating, share with your friends, really helps. And I also have a video on how to give a 5-star rating, because a lot of people have wrote to me asking me that they don't know how to do that. Until next week, take care.